Pacman.com.
Oh, the bonus show where you want to make money. Everybody else that makes money to fund themselves is bad.
Thank you, Alex. And also, if you would like a discount off of the cost of a membership, get on my newsletter at DavidPacman.com. You will thus get an email on Monday, Memorial Day, telling you how to take advantage of a beautiful membership discount.
I've got a message. 나 지금 심심해란 말이고. 내 손이 바빠. 대화가 끊기지 않게.
Oh, babe. 만족하고 싶은 너에게 가로, 세로처럼 취향을 말해줘. 널 알아가게. 마음과 마음이 닿게. 손과 손이 닿게. 쉬다가도 돼, 넌 나의 품에. 걸어갔던 내 맘이 조금 답답하지만 참는 자기의 복이 있잖아. 찬스를 시작해 서로에 대한 얘기. 어쩌면 아찔한 얘기들까지도 모든 길은 열어둬. 선은 지원해줘. 짓궂어도 못해 이대로 좋잖아. 오늘 네 옆자리 나 널 웃게 해줄 사람 나. 조금씩 마음을 풀어놔도 돼. 알고 싶어져, 알고 싶어져. 너의 모든 게 다 사소하더라도, 사소하더라도 알려줘 네 모든 걸.
Action.
오늘 네 옆자리 나 널 웃게 해줄 사람 나.
Pose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sound of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Technoland? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the the only fat beats in Pittsburgh, right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are.
That's the commitment we made.
In his first trip to Asia as president, Joe Biden's promise to defend Taiwan militarily if it's invaded by China. The White House took back his words, but was it a gaffe by the president or a new U.S. policy? We'll talk about Biden's trip, Taiwan, and today's meeting of the Quad, India, Australia, Japan, and the U.S. China's criticized the Quad as the Indo-Pacific version of NATO. Plus, we look at The Ransom, a new series in the New York Times detailing how France devastated Haiti's economy by forcing Haiti to pay massive reparations for the loss of slave labor after enslaved Haitians rebelled, founding the world's first black republic in 1804.
The New York Times article that was published this weekend, I think, will shed light on the very question of what makes the case of Haiti what we see today in terms of this country that people often refer to as the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The United Nations says the number of people displaced by war, conflict, and human rights abuses has topped 100 million for the first time. UN High Commissioner for Refugees, Filippo Grandi, announced the grim milestone as he met with Rohingya refugees who fled violence and government persecution in Burma.
Much as we're all focusing on Ukraine as a catastrophic emergency, we must not forget that there's other critical situations in the world that need attention and resources.
In Burma, at least 17 Rohingya, including three children, drowned after their boat capsized off the coast over the weekend. Dozens more are missing and fear dead. It's believed the Rohingya were attempting to cross the Bay of Bengal from Malaysia, fleeing persecution by Burma's military rulers. The UN reports as many as 10,000 Rohingya were killed by Burmese forces during the 2017 genocide, though some estimates put the death toll at double that number. Another 730,000 Rohingya were forced to flee Burma. In Mexico, three Honduran asylum seekers died Monday after their boat capsized off the coast of Veracruz. At least four others are missing. Another four were rescued, including a 12-year-old child. This is one of the survivors.
It is something sad, but just imagine, people won't stop trying to reach the U.S. because it's supposed to provide a better life. Don't think things are easy in our country.
This comes after a 36-year-old father from El Salvador and his 7-year-old son drowned in the Suchiate River as they attempted to cross into Mexico from Guatemala. In related news, asylum seekers trapped in the Mexican border of city of Tijuana led a protest Monday denouncing the Biden administration's use of Title 42, the Trump-era pandemic order that's been used to bar entry to over 2 million people arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border seeking refugee status. A federal judge on Friday ordered the Biden administration to continue enforcing the policy. Protesters insist they have a right under international law to claim asylum.
For us, Title 42 ends the dream of many, because in all immigrants' dreams, asylum is a right, and Title 42 takes that right away from us.
We've been here for almost a year in Tijuana. We've been in a shelter for 5 months, and we've been in a rented apartment for 5 more months, and it has been very difficult. I hope they give us support and let us enter the U.S., and we hope things there will be different, because here in Tijuana there is also a lot of danger.
In Yemen, three people were killed Monday after a drone crashed into a residential neighborhood in the capital, Sana'a. Witnesses said the Saudi-led coalition drone was shot down by Houthi rebels as it circled the skies over the capital.
Unfortunately, it fell on citizens. This is a commercial market, and these are street vendors. The spy drone fell on them, and this is a violation of the two-month truce in Yemen.
The United Nations is calling on Yemen's Houthi rebels and the Saudi-led coalition to extend the ceasefire, which is due to expire on June 1st. The World Food Program says 5 years of continuous war in Yemen has sparked the world's worst humanitarian crisis, with about two-thirds of all Yemenis, or some 20 million people, suffering from hunger and malnutrition. In Ukraine, at least one person was injured Monday as Russian forces shelled the center of Kharkiv. Residents showed reporters remnants of what appeared to be Russian cluster bombs used in the assault. Cluster munitions are banned under a global treaty that has not been ratified by Russia, Ukraine, or the United States. On Monday, the United Nations reported more than 2 million refugees have returned to Ukraine after Russian forces failed to capture major cities. On Monday, Ukraine's president, Volodymyr Zelensky, said he's willing to negotiate an end to the war, but only through direct talks with President Vladimir Putin.
I cannot accept any kind of meeting with anyone coming from the Russian Federation but the president of the Russian Federation, and only in the case when there is one issue on the table, stopping the war. There are no other grounds for any other kind of meeting.
A veteran Russian diplomat has resigned in protest of President Putin's decision to invade Ukraine. Boris Bondarev stepped down Monday from Russia's mission to the United Nations in Geneva, writing in a scathing email to his colleagues that he's never been so ashamed of his country. His resignation letter read in part, quote, "Those who conceive this war want only one thing, to remain in power forever. Live in pompous, tasteless palaces, sail on yachts comparable in tonnage and cost to the entire Russian Navy, enjoying unlimited power and complete impunity. To achieve that, they're willing to sacrifice as many lives as it takes," the Russian official Boris Bondarev wrote. Pfizer reported Monday three smaller-sized doses of its COVID-19 vaccine were safe and effective at preventing symptomatic illness in children under the age of five. Pfizer's announcement came as it prepared to submit a request for emergency use of its pediatric vaccine for U.S. children as young as 6 months old. Approval could come after the FDA convenes a panel of independent vaccine experts June 15th, when the agency will also consider Moderna's application for emergency use of its vaccine in young children. The U.S. Centers for Disease Control's warning gay and bisexual men they face an elevated risk of contracting monkeypox after public health officials identified four suspected cases of the viral disease in the U.S. and one definite one. Monkeypox is endemic to Central and West Africa and is most often spread from animals to humans. It can cause rashes and painful lesions on the body that, left untreated, can sometimes be fatal. The World Health Organization has recently identified 200 confirmed and suspected cases across a dozen countries. The WHO epidemiologist, Maria van Kerkhove, said Monday the monkeypox outbreak appears to be linked to sexual activity among men.
The transmission is really happening from close physical contact, skin-to-skin contact. So it's quite different than COVID in that sense. And the thing I just want to say here is that this is a containable situation, particularly in the countries like where we are seeing these outbreaks that are happening across Europe, in North America as well.
The Supreme Court ruled Monday two condemned prisoners in the state of Arizona cannot
present new evidence in federal court that could prove they did not receive adequate legal representation leading to their convictions and death sentences. The case involves David Martinez Ramirez and Barry Lee Jones, who say their lawyers failed to present evidence that could have exonerated them. Writing for the court's 6-3 conservative majority, Justice Clarence Thomas ruled that, quote, serial relitigation of final convictions undermines the finality that is essential to both the retributive and deterrent functions of criminal law, unquote. Critics say the ruling will prevent people wrongly convicted of crimes from proving their innocence. In a scathing dissent, Justice Sonia Sotomayor called the decision perverse and illogical. Sotomayor wrote, quote, two men whose trial attorneys did not provide even the bare minimum level of representation required by the Constitution may be executed because forces outside of their control prevented them from vindicating their constitutional right to counsel, Justice Sotomayor wrote. Amnesty International said Monday the number of executions globally rose by at least 20% in 2021, while the number of death sentences grew by 40%. Over 500 people were executed and more than 2,000 sentenced to death last year. Executions in Saudi Arabia in 2021 more than doubled. In Georgia, former Vice President Mike Pence called Monday for Republicans to rally behind incumbent Governor Brian Kemp, who hopes to be renominated as his party's candidate in today's primary gubernatorial election.
And when you say yes to Governor Brian Kemp tomorrow, you will send a deafening message all across America that the Republican Party is the party of the future.
Governor Kemp faces a primary challenge from David Perdue, the former Republican senator backed by Trump. On Monday, a Trump spokesperson criticized Pence over his endorsement of Kemp, telling the New York Times was, quote, desperate to chase his loss of relevance. On Monday, David Perdue drew accusations of racism after he said Democratic gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams, quote, should go back where he came from, unquote. Abrams was African-American, Georgia family in 1989. Georgia is five states holding primary elections today. In a closely watched race, voters in Texas' 28th congressional district will decide between Henry Cuellar, conservative incumbent who's backed by Democratic leaders, and Jessica Nero, progressive, supported by Senator Bernie Sanders, and Congressman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. In January, the FBI raided the home and office of Congressman Cuellar as part of a corrupt investigation. In North Carolina, students at Bennett College with past tuition waivers and collection will see $1.7 million of their debt erased. The union of borrowers known as the debt collector purchased paid off students of nearly 500 black women at Bennett and starkly black women at liberal arts college in Greensboro. This comes as active pressure President Biden holds his campaign pledge to cancel student debt. Now a $1.7 trillion bird held by 44 million people across the United States. The Washington Post reports the Justice Department will require federal agents to intervene if they see other law enforcement officers using excessive force. This is the first step to the DOJ's use of force policy in nearly two decades. This policy is scheduled to take place in July and comes after massive racial justice protests around the United States and around the world in response to police murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis two years ago this week. And a senior consultant at Shell has resigned, condemning the fossil giant for expanding oil and gas production despite mounting scientific warnings. This would lead to a climate catastrophe. Carolyn Dennett worked for the company for 11 years based in the United Kingdom. She shared news of her resignation in a video posted on LinkedIn.
Today I'm quitting because of Shell's double talk on climate.
Ecosystem of colonialism.
That's I see.
The Time series also looked at the U.S. military occupation of Haiti that lasted from 1915 to 1934. A key backer of the U.S. occupation was the National City Bank of New York, predecessor of Citibank. Former U.S. diplomat Gaspar, who now heads the Center for American Progress, has called on Citigroup to pay reparations to Haiti. Gaspar wrote on Twitter, a silent scream has been in his throat for decades about the role U.S. played in depleting Haiti. No one would listen. Finally, some truth, he said. Over the years, Haitian demands for reparations have been repeatedly shut down, sometimes with force. France's former ambassador to Haiti, Thierry Boucard, admitted in the New York Times that the ambassador ousted Haiti's first democratically elected president, Jean-Bertrand Aristide, because France wanted benefits, was that it ended our campaign demanding France pay financial reparations to Haiti. To talk more about Haiti, the devastating impact of colonialism, mass series, New York Times joined by two guests. Weston Nelson Alphenau is a Haitian American professor at Fordham University, teaches courses on the Atlantic slave trade, the American abolition movement, and Afro-Caribbean history. Gerald Torn also joins us. He's professor of history and American Studies at the University of Houston, author of many books, including Confronting Jackson, the U.S., the Haitian Revolution, and the Origins of the Dominican Republic. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Professor Alphenau, let's begin with you. So this series has come out in the New York Times to both criticism and praise. It's come out in both Creole and English, that's first for the New York Times. Can you explain the significance of what many are calling revelations to the general public? Certainly, people in Haiti have been alleging, not only alleging, but having proof of this.
Listening should have gotten is because it's coming from Haitians, many people view as sort of the African.
presence of the Western hemisphere, but what is an identity that Haitians proudly for reasons that freedom from black people.
I'd like to bring in Gerald Ford to the conversation, another historian who has covered the issue of colonialism here in America for decades.
Creating a narrative of Haiti as a functional country.
What do you think about that, Gerald?
Well, the questions obviously key. But keep in mind that what makes the United States unique is that slave owner expropriated property and the body of slave African taken without compensation. That helped rise terrorism Ku Klux Klan. In Haiti, as we've been discussing, the Haitians were obligated to pay back they're not enslavers. And likewise, if you look at the British possessions of Jamaica, Barbados, etc., you had London compensating the slavers by some measures that was not paid off until just a few years ago. And so this question of reparations raises quite key, and also quite key is the role of Haiti in helping to ignite our entire process of abolition, leading to capital loss, not least in the United States of America. The enslaving class are in the descendants' very memory. They have not forgotten Haiti's role. That's what they continue to punish Haiti for having merit rise up and slavery. And even today, they continue to punish Haiti as a haven for low-wage labor. U.S. baseball and the U.S. national pastime are largely manufactured by labor in Haiti. So there is still much sort out with regard to the entire controversy.
And Professor Alsup, you could also respond right today to the U.S. diplomat, Patrick Gaspard, now running for American Progress, demanding Citibank launch an investigation and the whole issue of reparations, whether you see it actually being real, given the devastation of Haiti.
I'm going to go back to what was asked by the New York Times. Let me remind all of you that it was 2010, just days after an earthquake had devastated the country, killed upwards of 200,000 and more people, that the New York Times provided a platform for one of its colleagues, David Brooks, to say some of the most racist things that I've ever read in the New York Times about Haiti.
Once this debt is paid, if ever paid,
which I like professional court, I believe there are parties that are best they can actually make it realize that possibility. Even if that debt were to be paid, we are already talking about decades of gaps, development that were missed in the process because of where the money was going. Something like up to 80% of education expenditures up until the early part of the 20th century is going to fight a debt today. And the fact that American firms were short streak with the federal government and the State Department,
Most definite. And I think the series, as it has been, could also have made a contribution if it had pointed out a close connection between France and the United States, In the 20th century, they began to talk about Citibank and how it was involved in the depredations of Haiti. But I think we have to go back to the Haitian period, always find some connections after all. We know that what became the United States was involved in the Bulgarian Movement would not have succeeded without the assistance of France. We know that there was French migration, a state that the French were involved in some of the depredations in Louisiana, for example. We know that Texas made a dramatic ally in the international front, and we also know that when the United States erupted in 1861 to 1865, it was France that opportunistically showed that moment to try to occupy Mexico. And then that extends to the life of slavery throughout the South by welcoming the mass revolt by the Mexican people to overturn that scheme. So there is much more excavation that needs to be done. I would like to reiterate my call for the New York Times to open the kimono and discourse these documents they say have been recovered in France so that all the scholars of the research can examine the same.
We haven't even talked about the Louisiana purchase, but we can't show. However, one end on the crisis that Haitians confront today when they try to come into the United States. I think it was last September, in response to the Haitian diplomat, U.S. Haitian envoy Daniel Foote, wrote, I will not associate with the United States inhumane counterproductive decisions to thousands of Haitian refugees. Foote's resignation came days after U.S. border patrol agents on horseback were chased, grabbing, and whipping Haitian asylum seekers gathered in a Bay Camp in Del Rio, Texas. We only have a minute, but the issue of Haitian refugees being deported by thousands into devastated Haiti.
Oh, well, I think your statement is that Haiti's understanding the racial legacy of imperial powers like the United States and France.
Our faith line going right back to the U.S. not recognizing Haiti's independence for decades, fearing that slave uprising would inspire and enslave people in the United States to rise up and rise up. Thank you so much for being with us. Asian Americans reporting from University where he teaches for Atlantic trade, American abolition, and African-Caribbean history. And thank you, Gerald Horn, professor in history and African-American studies at the University of Houston, author of many books, including Confronting Jack, the U.S. Asian Revolution, Origins of the Dominican Republic. Next up, First Asia President, Joe Biden promised to defend Taiwan militarily if invaded by China. Is this new U.S. policy? Stay with us. Peace report, Goodman, Gonzalez. President Biden invited Tokyo and Japan to meet with members of the Quad, the Prime Minister's of India, and the new Prime Minister of Australia, as part of that counter-China region. China's Quad, Indo-Pacific NATO, and accused of trumpeting the core mentality and stoking geopolitical rivalry. This comes as India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi has resisted U.S. pressure to end Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Tensions also hung over the Quad Summit Monday when Biden contradicted U.S. policy on Taiwan, vowing to defend Taiwan attacked by China, and made the comment in quite a news conference.
You didn't want to get involved in Ukraine conflict militarily for obvious reasons. Are you willing to get involved militarily to defend Taiwan if it comes to that?
Yes.
You are.
That's a commitment we made. We are not in a situation. We agree to one China policy, signed on to it, and all the attendant agreements made from there. But the idea that it can be taken by force is just not appropriate for the entire region. And other actions similar to what happened in Ukraine.
White House officials walked back Biden's comments as they've done before, but the Secretary Lloyd Austin and Biden's comments highlighting the commitment to Taiwan's relations to help provide Taiwan the means to defend itself. Today Biden again asked Taiwan, this time he insisted there's been no change to U.S. policy. Joined by Michael Director of the Institute's Asia Program, long-time U.S.-China relations analyst, his books and briefings include remaining challenges facing Taiwan. Welcome, Christine. Why don't you start off by responding to the significance of what Biden has said, not just yesterday, clearly, very deliberately, but he has repeated several times. And then China's accusation that the Quad, the four countries, Australia, India, Japan, and the United States are in Indo-Pacific NATO.
Right, thank you for having me. President Biden has spoken yesterday that the United States is committed to come to the security of Taiwan, the implication being that Taiwan will attack China. This, if he meant that exact meaning, it is literally not in line with U.S. policy. U.S. policy states that the United States would regard security a great concern. Pardon me. Any attack on Taiwan. And when President Zolt would come to Congress on what exactly to do about it. That is in U.S. law. There's no commitment to deploy forces as if Taiwan were a security ally of the United States, which it is not. But there is a commitment to provide defensive Article Taiwan, i.e. military sales. As the United States judges the security situation becoming more threatened by Taiwan, the U.S. has been providing military sales for many years. But this idea of the United States obligated to come to defend Taiwan attack is simply not U.S. policy. U.S. policy calls strategic ambiguity. It doesn't want to clear up this issue. Because it doesn't want to provide what you might call a blank check to Taiwan through possibly endless Taiwan policy, like the provocation that the U.S. would then come to defend the Taiwan problem. And also, when reinforced Asian aggression, that the U.S. is revising its policy in Taiwan as a de facto security partner, independent nation. And this would absolutely undermine the one policy that the United States has held for many decades. Under that policy, it traded right on the U.S. one China stance that did not challenge the Chinese position that Taiwan was part of China. It traded that for Chinese assurance to pursue peaceful unification as a power priority. While not completely giving up the ability to use force, but putting that as a top priority. Now, both sides have this understanding of the basis of normalization. And being steadily weakened by President Biden's comment, we can dig even further.
Well, Michael, so I want to talk about the strategic ambiguity in terms of there was a period of time founding of the People's Republic of China, and the U.S. tried to recognize the people's Republic and saw the nationalist Taiwan as the legitimate ruler of China. You talk about the change that occurred during the years and the possible implications of President Biden attempting to change that policy.
Yes, the change occurred back during the early 1970s, opening the threat to China when things flew to Beijing, and then later on, After formal diplomatic relations, they normalized in 1979, the United States transferred its recognition from Taiwan to Beijing. I mean, Beijing being the sole government of China. Now that happened because the Soviet Union had become the adversary of both the United States and the Republic of China. And President Nixon thought it much better if the United States had good relations with China, as developed relations with Russia, rather than Russia and China have good relations. So both China and the United States have common interests in working together to try to maneuver and counter leverage against the leverage of the Soviet Union at that time, so that's the origins of the shift. But Nixon also wanted to have contact with China because he thought it was ridiculous, shunning a billion people. Or I guess at that time it was less than a billion, 800 million people. On a plan for many decades to be done. And that it was serving no positive purpose. And that we needed to have a normal relationship with the People's Republic of China. So for Taiwan, although we had diplomatic relations with Taiwan, no longer regarded Taiwan as a government representative of China. And that was a sovereign independent state. We acknowledge, without formally recognizing, we acknowledge challenge. The Chinese position is Taiwan is a part of China. And so we all know as Taiwan, unofficial relations, non-diplomatic relations, which included contact at a social level, some government level, but not diplomatic means. And then we have 10 seconds, the sale of how we have kind of balance in the United States, trying to keep relations with Taiwan, which is now frayed badly.
Well, this is something we will continue to cover, Michael Swain, Director, Quincy and East Asia Program. Long time US-China relations analyst. And that does it for our broadcast.
That's a counterfeit.
So what?
Skin lotion could have some scary antifreeze or other poisons.
It could even be urine and mouth droppings all over your skin.
You wouldn't know it.
That's creepy.
Yeah, that's why we need to know what's inside.
To find out how common cause real harm to your family, visit NSEEP.org/real, brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, United States Patent and Trademark Office.
You are listening to ABM 3MX, the Mock Radio. You're tuned in to the encore presentation of the Mock Radio program. But last weekend was massive music, which means there was no mock. How about an encore presentation of the artist I featured during Massive Music Weekend?
Starting with 30 minutes of Chicago's own serial issue.
by Jim and Ellis, the Power Pop Trio, released in 1987.